From the cool and crisp landscapes of Sweden to the dark cinemas of Asia, evoking a sense of place on the page is a delicate art. And whether it's the texture of the paper or the choice of typography, the printed medium is all about the detail, as our two guests from two very different sections of the newsstand will explain to us today on The Stack. Hello from Midori House in London. You're tuned to The Stack. Ahead of us on the programme,
we have this idea. It hasn't been done like this before, but that doesn't mean that someone else isn't going to jump in there.
We'll peruse the pages of a biannual publication that takes its readers to a different location each issue, with a little help from some fairly impressive photography. Plus,
beauty of the paper, and try to also celebrate, in a sense, the physicality, and the cut on the cover also celebrates the physicality of the printed format.
We'll settle into the cinemas of Seoul with a movie magazine aiming to expand the horizons of Asian cinema beyond the continent's borders. That's all to come on The Stack, 30 minutes of print industry analysis here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to The Stack with me, Tom Edwards, coming to you from Studio 2 here at Midori House in London. The world of travel magazines can sometimes be a tricky one to navigate, but my guest today takes a rather simpler approach to many others on the newsstand, ditching the usual crowded scrapbook of destinations clogged with adverts for package deals. Her magazine focuses on just one destination each issue with some impressive photography. The result is Lodestar's Anthology, a magazine that takes us to the heart of a place yet leaves us hungry for more. Liz Schaefer is the editorial and creative director, and she joins us here today. Liz, welcome to The Stack.
Thank you, Tom. Good to have you
with us. Congratulations on the latest issue, number 5, Sweden. I would say it's a thing of beauty.
I like you saying that. Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about the look, because you've brought a few of them in, so we can see the sort of the... Well, it's not really that much of an evolution in the sense that there's clearly a very identifiable strand of mood. I don't know. It's one of the magazines, I think, that I've seen on The Stack recently that has a mood positively pouring off the page. Tell us how, even if we go back to the beginning, how you've sort of set about achieving that.
Well, I think that was the one thing we were always very certain about, was the mood. We wanted it to be a celebration of travel, a celebration of place. It is quite rose-tinted. Mm. It's a very sort of happy, jovial...
We like that.
There's nothing wrong with that in the world, I don't think. Independent print probably has a responsibility to bring that colour and that joy back into the world. So that was the one thing we were certain about. We wanted it to be beautiful. We wanted to really showcase the best of a country, the reason that you travel, capture that sense of wanderlust. What has changed for us is the nuances of it, I think. We issue one, which is no longer here, completely sold out. It was a bit of an experiment for us, I think. We were sort of trying to find our sea legs. And as we've gone through the issues, we've really honed what we're doing to get to a point where we feel the magazine we have now is what we always imagined we were going to have. Mm. And hopefully to the readers, it looks like we were always there. But I think when you're on the other side of that, you're a bit particular.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because we often talk to people I find at this sort of stage in the evolution, as we use that word again, of a magazine, whether you were kind of sure at the beginning or whether it was just like, look, the time is now, we have to kind of not just dip our feet in, but take the plunge completely. And we're sure enough that we know that we're going to do something that has real lasting value. Was that how you and your colleagues were?
It was the combination. I think we were sure with issue one that we had done everything we wanted to do with it. It was perfect. But at the same time, there was that panic of, you know what, we have this idea. It hasn't been done like this before, but that doesn't mean that someone else isn't going to jump in there. So there was this sense of urgency. We were really excited to get it out. And every issue that's come out, I think if you weren't proud of it as it came out, you would have done a bad job. Hmm. So for issue one, issue two, issue three, we were incredibly happy. But as you get further along, as you meet these amazing contributors, if you have more experience, meet other editors, you know, your project evolves, and that's what you want it to do.
And tell me a little bit more then about the idea of this idea of kind of tackling one country, because it's interesting now we see there's magazines like, say, Boat, you know, where people up sticks and go somewhere. People are getting to grips with that as an idea. Why was that the right decision for you? Because someone might say, well, hang on, it's counterintuitive to do a travel magazine and stay in one place, even if it's quite a big place like Sweden, for example. Why did that seem so right from the outset?
I'd worked as a travel writing photographer for a while, and I worked for some amazing publications, and it was wonderful to be given sort of 2,000, 3,000 words to explore a city. But that was all that they would do on that particular country. And I just didn't feel that was enough. You get a feel of what's there, but you have no idea of the neighboring areas. You have no idea about the history, the culture, the what else is going on. And I think I just felt like a travel guide could make the leap from being a guide to being a magazine. You know, as more and more sort of magazines make journals on the newsstand with, you know, more in-depth looks, like, I just felt that it was time to do it for a country.
And I figure you and your colleagues, like, well, at least whatever it is, 200 and something countries in the world.
So oh, yeah, we have time.
That's
and then
promising.
There's volume two,
exactly.
Volume three, things change.
Tell me a bit about, because I imagine that you're probably getting inundated with questions about this. What's the selection process? Because obviously we're in England, Scotland, Australia, and people will notice from various inflections why perhaps that happened. What is that process like? Does it have to be something that speaks, I don't know, to you very personally, very immediately? Because for Sweden, for example, as you mentioned in your editor's letter in this, not a country that you actually knew very well or indeed had visited much prior. So is it about somewhere that just has an immediate impact, places you're curious about? What's the process?
I think early issues, practicality came into it as well. England and Scotland were easy for me to travel to. I also adored them. I mean, I moved from the other side of the world to be here, so I really wanted to show people what I loved about England, why I wanted to make that move. So it was a topic of passion as well as something that was easy to achieve. Then it made sense to do Scotland. I got homesick, so did Australia. And at that point, I think the magazine, we realised it was here for the long haul. Mm. And it was time to really think about getting a spread geographically across the world of different countries. So we picked somewhere non-English speaking that I still felt like I knew quite well. And then along came Sweden, and it was time for a challenge. We'd grown our network of contributors. So while for me and a couple of our staff writers, it was a very new idea, which isn't a terrible thing because fresh eyes are always fun. We did have photographers who'd grown up there, who understood the light, who understood the seasons. We had writers who travelled for years. And that's what makes you able to do a magazine like this, that network of contributors. It means that even if your knowledge isn't the most in-depth to begin with, you can trust who you're working with.
It's interesting you mentioned the photographers catching the light, because that's one of the most striking things, actually, I think, about the Swedish edition is, you know, picture of the light and whether it's kind of, you know, close-ups of, you know, flowers or plants in the morning or animals. I think there's a cracking dog portrait in there, which is always one that I enjoy. There's something rather extraordinary about the light in Sweden, is there not? That, I don't know, you would in some ways think it might be quite hard to capture on the page, but you must be pretty pleased with the job that your photographers and all your contributors did in managing to do exactly that.
Well, I love that. I mean, I grew up in Australia, which is a land of harsh light and bright colours, and you have a certain window for photography every day. Otherwise, it's a real challenge. And to go to Sweden, you have this beautiful ancient landscape that is so appreciated. And the light there, you have this beautiful northern light that is just, it's soft, it's delicate, it's wonderful, it is just magical. And that's what we actually found with each issue. We not only developed a colour palette very organically, a sort of a colour would shine through, but there was a light difference in every magazine as well.
And what about the kind of the compilation? Because we've mentioned that obviously there's some really arresting photography, but there's some illustration as well, which manages to sit in that same palette, which I guess some people might say, oh, it's slightly kind of muted, but it's very gentle. It's very, I don't know, it's very sort of restful magazine to read, even though it might spark you to, you know, take to the road, which is kind of clever. How do you go about balancing that up editorially in terms of, you know, the mix of illustration, kind of clever bits of graphic? What's the sort of process like that?
It's quite a method now for us. We sort of have figured out what to do, but it's about, we know our contributors very well at this stage. We work with a lot of them on consecutive issues. We bring in new ones. There's always a bit of a dialogue before anything is commissioned. We try and match them to the content. But it's about making sure that those who contribute to the issue know the country, that they're exposed to the text before they do the illustrations, that our designer is given a really wide selection to work with, and so he can make sure that there is that continuity. But it is about having that connection to the place, and I think that's how we got the colour and the light to work the way it did, because everybody understood Sweden by the time they were submitting their pieces. You know, it may have been new and exciting to begin with, but we felt like we knew it after a couple of weeks there, because it is this dream country. It does look like we've captioned that magazine. It is beautiful and kind and historic and amazing. So I think knowing the content is really important for illustrators, photographers, writers, because it just produces different work and it produces work that fits together.
Wonderful stuff. Well, we'll have more insights from Liz Schaefer from Lodestar's anthology a little bit later in the programme. When we think about the world of cinema, images of the marquee at your local multiplex may spring to mind, or perhaps even the endless looping scroll of Netflix. Of course, for the curiously minded, the art form offers far more, something editor and publisher Davide Cesaro is hoping to tap into. Based in Seoul, but with a network of contributors across the continent, Nang aims to enlighten readers on the many facets of Asian cinema, both past and present, with an audience far beyond its borders. Davide Cesaro spoke to Monocle's Ben Rylan.
It's a print-only magazine, independent in nature. It's entirely devoted on cinema in Asia, and it's going to be a biannual publication, which is going to last for 5 years. So it's a 10-issue magazine. And another main characteristic is that each issue will have a specific theme, and then maybe we can enter more into this. Each issue will be guest edited or guest curated. So in a sense, it's a bit of a unusual, perhaps a hybrid creature, but I really hope that readers will enjoy it. And I hope it will find its place among the wonderful independent magazines being published on several topics today.
So, Davide, talk to me about the look and feel of the publication then. Just looking at your first issue here, it's the front cover is actually completely plain white, and then you've got the title of the magazine towards the top here, Nang, which is being cut into the cover. So when I open the cover here, the white turns into a black cover, which is behind that, which of course gives the impression that Nang is written in black. And then the cover actually exposes, it folds back to expose the binding that you've got here where the page have been sewn together. Tell me about how you came to decide upon how the magazine would look and feel in the hand.
It's my first publishing project. I've been involved in publishing before, but as a kind of publisher and independent publishers, this is the very first. The idea was very much grow organically together with the designers Shin Hae-ok and Shin Dong-hyuk, who are Korea-based, a wonderful duo. We really started with the format and with the beauty of the paper, and tried to also celebrate, in a sense, the physicality. Indeed, the cut on the cover also celebrates the physicality of the printed format, and the idea, of course, of cinema, so of shadows and light, and of illusion as well, in a sense, given that, as you said, the title looks as if it's printed on black. The whole format wants to be as portable as possible, but the materials and the quality of the binding, which is double sewn with threads in different colors, tried to go to kind of make the magazine be extremely beautiful, something that readers will want to enjoy and hopefully keep. This was part of the intention from the very beginning, to try and do a cinema magazine which kind of is characterized by both a very original and unique and engaging articles and images, and also by special materials and a very kind of beautiful reading experience, in a sense. And in this regard, I was very fortunate that two partners in Sweden, Arctic Paper and Göteborgs Tryckeriet, so a paper company and a printer, decided to kind of support the project, so we could achieve this, in a sense, a preciousness and this beauty of the materials and the printing quality.
I've just opened up to page 15 of the first issue here, and I've got a selection of frames which are from the film West of the Tracks from 2003. And it really takes us through a sequence of the film which features a steam train. It does strike me that a lot of magazines that do cover the film industry, regardless of where they are in the world, they don't do a very good job of taking us inside a film. So there seems to be a very, very harsh divide between what is a film and what is a magazine. And I think the way that you've set out these frames on the page here, that actually does really take us inside this sequence of the film. You get the sense of movement here by just following from frame to frame. Is that something that you've been considering, how to present the concept of cinema on a completely different medium, being, of course, the printed page?
It's something I've been particularly keen on. And the print quality and the use of images is also something in response to me being particularly frustrated by, indeed, the use of images in many film publications, which paradoxically, in a sense, sometimes, I mean, very common, a bit stereotypical kind of use of images. And I find this particularly ironic given all the effort that the directors and cinematographers and the cast and crew put into the final result on screen. So we tried to replicate this in the magazine. That particular spread you referred to, indeed, I think it works beautifully. It was also an input from the particular contributor for that spread. And so showing particular frames from a sequence indeed gives that sense of kind of replicating the movement on screen. And in this case, that particular spread also worked beautifully because to those who are familiar with the history of cinema, one of the very first films in the history of cinema, of course, is the arrival of a train at La Ciudad station in France by the Lumière brothers. So we also wanted to, and the contributor here wanted to echo, in a sense, the arrival of a new train in the 21st century in China by this director, so a kind of heralding and mirroring the train of the 19th century and the train of the 21st century.
And just finally, Davide, perhaps you could tell me a bit about the market at the moment for cinema magazines, where you are, speaking to us from South Korea, of course. I know that you mentioned earlier that you're hoping the magazine resonates with people outside of the region and can really bridge that gap between the two cinematic cultures, as some might put it. How do you see the magazine fitting into the local market over there? Is there much on the newsstands for cinema lovers in Asia, and do you see a place for something like your magazine in the long term?
In different parts of Asia, of course, there are magazines not in English. There are magazines in respective Asian languages about cinema of different qualities and different traditions, some of which are very good, of course. Another key point of using English, as I explained in my introduction to that issue zero introduction, which will be soon available online. Using English will, of course, has very much to do with accessibility. So I was pleased that some stockists and bookstores have shown interest in the publication already. And so issue one will be present in some physical bookstores, both in Europe, in the US, and in Asia. So hopefully it will find its place because it's the only one entirely dedicated to this topic. And the English language hopefully will allow the publication to travel as widely as possible and to be as accessible as possible to readers.
Davide Cazzaro, editor-in-chief and publisher of Nang magazine, talking to The Stack's Ben Rylan. And of course, for more on the world of film, be sure to catch Ben's cinema show here on Monocle 24. New episodes live every Friday. We'll be back just after this with more from Liz Schaefer. Stay tuned.
Meet the Writers is the show in which we have a chance to get intimate with some exciting authors. Airing at 1500 every Saturday and available as a podcast thereafter, it's an in-depth discussion about the life and work of a different writer every week, with me, Georgina Godwin, on Monocle 24.
You're back with The Stack on Monocle 24 with me, Tom Edwards, and my special guest today, Liz Schaefer from Lodestar's Anthology. Liz, unsurprisingly, I guess, for people who are in the magazine business and maybe as passionate about magazines as they are about travel, you have a voracious appetite, one imagines, for the printed page as well as for getting out and about. And you've brought a couple of magazines in, which, well, we like to hear from people things they like, things that maybe inspire them. And we can talk a bit more about how you draw your inspiration from the newsstand in a second. But maybe let's start with what you've got on the top of your stack of magazines there. I see Toast. Tell us more.
Toast was a magazine that came out before we launched Lodestar's, and I just fell completely in love with it. When you come from a writing background as opposed to a publishing or design background, you are a sucker for words and you're a sucker for really meaty content. And Toast has managed to do that on the subject of food and at the same time be a really amazing example of how you can use white space very well. Hmm. They're incredibly design savvy, but every word you just enjoy reading.
And in terms of the content, so it's interesting because I can't remember what their strapline is. It's something like food and...
A celebration of food and ideas.
Food and ideas. So you think, oh, that's quite broad. What exactly do they mean? And I guess it's a bit of a... Well, talking about food, often people use that phrase fusion, which is a bit annoying. But in a sense, it is a bit of a fusion of a bit of culture, a bit of food, how it all gels together. But why does it work? You mentioned it's got this very kind of quite a coherent sort of design ethic to it. Is that what it is? Or is it, again, is it about editors and writers who clearly know their content? Is that what it's always all about?
I think what they managed to do was just nail both completely. It is a beautiful design in that they have that really clean use of white space, really clean use of columns, amazing font. But the way they position photographs on the page, they're slightly off-center in sometimes, and they'll have fun with illustrations, and they'll do some overlays that you just don't necessarily see in a lot of magazines. And at the same time, every article, and they are quite different, you know, they've drawn on chefs and sommeliers to write for them. It's just fascinating. It's, I think food is a area that everyone's incredibly interested in, but it can seem quite alien, I think, really good food. And this makes it approachable. It makes chefs approachable. It's the fun of food and the culture of food, and it's just good to get lost in.
Absolutely. And it's interesting, I guess, because, I mean, obviously there's some great, there's the Faverkan piece in the Sweden Lodestars anthology, and other times you touch upon that theme. It's very easy to do food coverage badly, I think, and it's quite difficult to do it well. Do you ever, because obviously you're dipping in and out of so many things, if you're looking at, say, a whole scope of a country per issue, do you worry about scratching the surface of a particular area like food? And do you end up thinking, oh my God, we could do the Lodestar Sweden food special only? Do you ever worry about that? Or is it nice to be able to kind of dip in and out? A smorgasbord, if you will, in magazine terms.
It's, I think, with any magazine, even if you can give 156 pages to one country, you have to accept you can't write about everything, you can't feature everything. And the whole point of our magazine, it's we're a jumping-off point. We're a very in-depth jumping-off point. So we do write about food, and it would be lovely to do an entire magazine about Swedish food because, oh my God, those flavours are just like unlike anything else. And especially with the previous issue being Italy. I mean, you could get very lost in food there, but I think if you give people a taste, if you find the right voices to sort of talk about the food, be that sort of interview with a chef or a distiller, and you feature the right restaurants, then you can give people an idea of what's there. And we are very clear about the fact that this is an idea. This is just a tiny sampling of what's there, but look how good the sampling is.
Exactly. It's our curated thing, to overuse another word. Now, what else have you got? You have a copy of the Smith Journal, which formerly the steward of which was one Adrian Craddock. Another Aussie who he's one of our correspondents now, but used to work with us here at Monocle HQ. And this is another magazine with a really kind of interesting worldview, quite sort of positive, quite optimistic, interested in looking at, I don't know how you describe it, kind of timeless themes, really, in a more detailed way. I imagine a number of our listeners will be familiar with it. But what is it about Smith Journal that kind of resonates with you, Liz?
Firstly, it's an Australian publication. And I'm a bit of a sucker
that's
for them.
A bit of jingoism. That's
do you need
wrong.
Another
bit,
reason?
A bit of flag waving is good.
But no, I found Smith Journal amazing. It came out when I was still at university in Australia. And it was just, for me being that far away, it was a very different magazine scene to what was going on in London at the time. Mm. And it was just so exciting to see sort of independent print taking time to be beautiful as well as exploring ideas and giving writers and illustrators and photographers a real chance to showcase their work in a beautiful way. And for me, what's amazing about Smith is it's remained true to that. Mm. As it's gotten much bigger and much more international, it is still, you pick up an early issue and you still feel the same way towards it.
And that's interesting because I find that process by which magazines come to be viewed as an authority on something is rather interesting. I guess here at Monocle, we've been around for just shy of 10 years, which is pretty amazing. And there's that same notion of becoming an authority on whether it's design or culture or doing good business. Are you interested in becoming that authority, or are you more interested in staying true to your interests and your team and just doing something that you find personally inspiring? Or do you look at it in that? Is there a big grand scheme like that?
It gets quite schizophrenic as a magazine gets further along. You probably feel the same. It started off, it was always going to be that we were going to be true to what we were doing. We were going to write and we were going to photograph what we liked, what made us happy. And I think we will continue to do that, absolutely. But you do become aware of sort of what's going on a wider scale. You do aware that you have more and more readers, you're getting bigger, and you do have to take a more business approach. Mm. And that's a really interesting point to be at because it's, you know, how do you balance that? How do you sort of ride this wave that you're suddenly on and do what you did in issue one?
And does that sit comfortably with you? Because it's so funny, almost each week on the programme, I end up asking editors or senior creatives by magazines, well, can you separate the commercial imperatives and realities from your editor's worldview, or do you necessarily need to have that kind of commercial savvy? And I guess launching a magazine from scratch, you would say you definitely need that commercial savvy. But does that sit comfortably with you? Is that a happy place to be operating in, if you like, in those two worlds? Or do you just see it as one? I don't know.
you think differently on two approaches. Like, thankfully, I love both sides of it. I love running a business, and I will never, ever not love writing and editing and finding stories. You do find that you switch between the two mindsets. You will have, you know, a morning or a day where you're just emailing advertisers and trying to make it work for them. And then you will suddenly be editing someone's writing, you know, the next day, and you'll just remember how much you adore that and how important that is. And I don't think you can let either of those balls drop. Because, you know, the business side works because it's a creative entity, and you know, we can make a creative entity because the business is working. So I think knowing that they're so linked, you are able to juggle them both. And, you know, as the team gets bigger, you're able to sort of let go of certain aspects, which is a challenge in itself.
A little bit of delegation, the D word. Now, we should just talk very briefly, Liz, before we finish about where next, because obviously you sort of whet the reader's appetite at the end of the edition, and Canada and Japan in the sort of spotlight. How far along are we? And I guess I need to ask, why those two? It continues the impressive international spread, of course, but any other kind of insights you can share with us?
Well, we got back from our Canada travels 2 weeks ago. We spent about 6 weeks on the ground. Well, I spent about 6 weeks on the ground, and we've had other writers sort of there in and out at different times trying to really capture across spectrum of seasons. And then Japan work will begin in November. Selection makes sense at the time when you're called upon to ask why you chose a country a couple of months later. You're like, seemed like a good idea.
Canada's a very big place, right? So there's lots of good stories to tell, if nothing else.
It just seemed right. It seemed... With Sweden, for example, there was a big interest in Scandinavia, and we sensed that and we picked up on that, and we just had to go before that wave passed. With Canada, we met a couple of contributors that we knew we wanted to work with who were based there. There are a couple of stories I was desperate to do. And so it just made sense. It made sense working with the seasons. It made sense working with the amazing tourism board.
It all came together. And that sense of seasonality, again, it's interesting. You know, we talk a lot about things like provenance and where things have come from and seasonality, well, across everything, actually, here at Monocle. And I guess that's kind of what you really get a sense of from the page, because it does feel like a scrapbook of a year or a life lived in these countries. Finally, maybe, how do you keep doing that? Is it about finding, as you've already mentioned, you know, the best writers, photographers who can truly capture something? What's the secret? Or does it mainly come down to old-fashioned hard work in the end?
I'd like to think that's a factor in it, that maybe I am necessary in that sense. Such a big part of this for me has been meeting the contributors that we work with, and you just get so inspired by these writers and photographers who adore what they do, and it's their absolute passion, and, you know, you feed off that to a degree. There are other people out there who believe in print, who believe in really good quality work, and who have a great time doing it. So I think meeting those people not only gives you this amazing content to use and that drives you forward, but, you know, realizing that there is this huge network of creatives, not just in London, but across the world, that you can tap into, that's a reason to keep going, because there are more people to meet and there's more work to put out there.
Wonderful. Well, more power to you, Liz. It's great stuff. Congratulations on issue 5. I can't wait to read about Canada and Japan in the future. That's Liz Schaefer from Lodestar's Anthology. Thanks for being with us on The Stack.
Thanks for having us.
And that is all we have time for on this week's programme. Thanks to our producers, Ben Ryland and Fernando Augusto Pacheco, and to our editor, Cassie Galpin. If you have any comments or queries, drop us a note, info@monocle.com. And don't forget to join us at the same time next Saturday. You can always listen again anytime at monocle.com or via iTunes or your preferred podcast platform. This is The Stack. I'm Tom Edwards. Thank you very much for listening.